I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. And I think that if we can see Middle Eastern people as being fearfully and wonderfully made, just like us, by God, that helps as we get to know them and develop friendships with them. And also, we're going to discuss a little bit about how one shares or just explains our faith to Middle Easterners in a way that's helpful and that helps break down some of the preconceptions that they have of Christianity, and to do that without confronting or getting in arguments, which doesn't do anyone any good.
That's assuming that they're Muslim Middle Easterners.
Right.
May be Christian Middle Easterners who may in fact feel that their background is sort of the original Christianity, and we're sort of the hybrid, as it were. And that's sort of an interesting experience. We all grow up feeling that, well, our tradition is the real original tradition. Then you run into someone whose church goes back to the first century, and it makes you think a minute, you know. Gee, they've been there a long time. So, but yeah, we're really kind of focusing in on the relationship between American Christians and Muslim Middle Eastern people, because that's kind of the primary dynamic that we deal with in West to East. There are Muslim Americans and there are Christian Middle Easterners, but they are minorities, very, very small minorities. And so the primary dynamic as East meets West is both a difference in culture, a difference in religious background, and a cause for a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of suspicion between East and West. I thought it would be fun, instead of us pontificating initially, to take a case study, and that might sort of get us thinking. And so I'll just outline a very simple example, someone that I know who had an interaction with a Middle Eastern person, and there was some problem that resulted. And then I want to get your feedback on maybe why that happened. What were the problems in this relationship? This is a fairly recent incident, nothing dramatic, but it's an American female student who was trying to get to know Middle Eastern students. And among the Middle Eastern students that she was trying to get to know was a woman from the Gulf countries, from United Arab Emirates. The woman was a married woman whose husband was there at the university. And so this American student, along with meeting some of these Middle Eastern male students, had come across her and was trying to befriend her, took a real interest in her. And after knowing her for several months, she and I were discussing the situation, and she said, "I'm not sure what happened, but I kept trying to invite her to my house." The American woman was trying to invite the Middle Eastern woman to her house. And I did everything I could. Showed how much I was interested in them and was as friendly as I could be, but she seemed very reluctant and increasingly seemed reluctant to come to my house or to, she seemed to be kind of standoffish and cool to me. Initially she seemed very friendly, but then as time went on she grew more and more cool, and I can't understand what I'm doing wrong. Why is this Middle Eastern woman not taking advantage of my offer of friendship? Now, I'll go up to the board, and you guys speculate a little bit about what might have happened. Let's just throw out some ideas. What do you think would be the reasons that this Middle Eastern woman might
Was this here or there?
Here.
Here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she thought the American woman's husband was the man. She, they can't go somewhere where there's a man, isn't that right?
But I can't believe she didn't communicate that. No. Why didn't she say what her reasons why she did?
American woman's husband? Mm-hmm. Single woman.
Oh, she was a single woman. I'm sorry. I thought she was
married. Oh, you said her husband was there.
Yeah, the Milesian woman had a husband, but the American woman was single. And she thought perhaps the Milesian
woman would
be...
would be a good guess.
But that's a good guess. I think that's certainly one of the critical areas is the male-female.
She was raising pigs. No.
No. That's a joke. Did you get that? Muslims do not eat pigs.
Pigs,
they do not eat pork, and they don't even like to be near
pigs. You
don't
look at pigs.
Well, maybe she needed to go through the husband to ask if the wife could come.
First of all, just finish this. Okay, maybe... she needed an intermediary.
The husband had to be...
she needed her
consulted.
Right. That's very perceptive. I think in many cases that's true. Husband, wife, students coming into school, typically it's very difficult to even interview the wife, particularly if they're together, because the husband keeps jumping in and answering just like I do for Anne, you know. No, but they really do. And I had this Omani friend. I thought, well, this guy is different, because he came in. He insisted on sitting out in the lounge and sending his wife into the other room with me to be interviewed. And he insisted on this. And he knew she wouldn't say a word unless they were separated. I thought, well, this guy is really interesting. And sure enough, he turned out to be a real unusual guy. Any other thoughts as to...
if they were friends, or at least if the American woman considered them friends, why didn't she just say, are you able to come over to my house? Or, and if the she started to feel standoffish, why are you pulling away from me?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, what is the reason? Instead of wondering for 6 weeks or 8 weeks why this woman's pulling away from her, ask her.
Right, why
I mean,
not?
She was unfamiliar with the customs of the, you know, and didn't care enough maybe to find out.
Or what, ask her, yeah, well, what are your customs of coming and visiting?
Right.
You know, whether, you know, so
right.
Maybe the American woman could make plans for that so she could satisfy them.
Anything to do with food?
Food issues, let's just throw that out. Maybe afraid that she'd be contaminated if she went to this non-Muslim house.
Right.
Alcohol or...
About to distrust, though. Is there any chance that she would distrust the American woman in getting to be a friend?
This could be a very likely fear that a Muslim woman coming to America... I've had some of them express this fear that they're going to be converted, and so that they sort of assume in the beginning that anybody who's friendly to them is trying to get something. So my great axiom is, if you approach someone from another culture, whatever it is you do not want them to think, they will. So whatever you're hiding, if you have a hidden motive, whatever agenda you have, you can believe they will assume that. So right off the bat, you know, if you're trying to hide something, the other person usually has already figured that out. They've already guessed or have already assumed that you've got something that you're trying to get out of them. Whether it's money, religion, political agenda, you name it. People are very clever and very sharp. And they pick up right away if a person is being unnatural, if a person is doing it for some ulterior motive. So people sense right away whether you're a genuine friend or whether this is some kind of a project, you know.
The way you presented it, though, I didn't get that feeling at all. That
right.
The American that, student was not...
She
really wanted to have her to her home.
Maybe both, you know, maybe a combination. What I haven't told you is that this American female student, from my perspective and probably from the Middle Eastern woman's perspective, looks glamorous. She looks glamorous. She appears to the Middle Eastern woman to be a very cosmopolitan, glamorous woman. She wears shorts. She wears skirts.
Short skirt.
As far as the Middle Eastern woman is concerned, this is like a Playboy model from her perspective. Now, she's got a husband. Obviously, she's going to be a little concerned about how her husband might relate to this woman. It also happens, as I hinted earlier, that this American woman has become friends with a lot of single Arab men on the campus. Has been very friendly with them, buddy-buddy, going out to Denny's together. As we began talking about this, I said, well, you know, she looks at you as if you're a prostitute. I mean, to be blunt, that's the best way of explaining her fear, is to use that analogy. And it was like suddenly her face went white, you know. Oh, no, what have I done? You know? And she said, now, what can I do? What advice would you give her if she really wanted to be a good friend with this Arab woman? What would she do to restore that friendship?
Be respectful and culture in the way they dress, because she's certainly being disrespectful. Yeah.
Of course, she's in her own culture, right?
Yeah.
Should she put on a veil?
No.
Is there an in-between where if, you know, you want to relate to someone who's from another culture, you can sort of accommodate
halfway. Oh, I'm sorry,
halfway.
I thought you said she was over, this was the university
no, here.
Over there.
This is
the
university
this
here.
This is in the States.
Could she speak, could they both speak the same language?
They communicated in English, yeah.
And why couldn't she just say to her, I'm sorry if I have offended you in any way, but in America, it's not a bad thing for a single woman to be friendly with single men.
Right.
But if this offends you, I will cease and desist.
Yeah. You could try the direct approach, right? What would be another strategy if she was real, you know, concerned about this and wanted to win her back?
Well, I'd probably show her that I wasn't afraid to wear, you know, a longer skirt or pants, or you know, be a little more conservative and stuff.
Interesting. So you could make some accommodation, possibly. What one of the things that I suggested was that she might want to distance herself a little bit from the single man. And that was hard advice for her to take. You know, the reaction was, wow, I mean, that's a little more than I can handle. Because she liked these guys. And I said, well, I'm afraid it may be a choice between one and the other. From that woman's perspective, she cannot handle, probably, having this kind of a mixed male-female situation. And interestingly enough, a postscript, the couple ended up leaving the area, went to another part of the United States where there are more Middle Eastern people, because of this kind of thing. That is, the husband and the wife felt so much out of their element, they were so uncomfortable, that they wanted to find another place where they had friends who were like them, people that they could feel comfortable with. So this was a very intense feeling for these people. From our perspective, we just have a real hard time understanding, you know, why in the world this would be such a problem.
And it wouldn't have been as much of a problem if her single men friends had been American.
But being Middle Eastern, really.
See, she's crossing that culture barrier at the wrong place. Mm-hmm. She, you know, within our culture, it's understandable that men and women mix much more. But she crossed over and started mixing with single Arab men.
You want to tell them what our Kuwaiti family said after a year in Kuwait?
Oh, well, we would go visit this Kuwaiti family weekly, and we talked about a variety of things. We usually had to bring up the topics and the subjects because they weren't used to sitting and discussing things with Americans. And we were sort of a diversion in the evening or something. I'm not sure how they viewed us.
I think we were the weekly entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah, and we asked them some really interesting questions about their culture and their background and so on. But anyway, the thing that they said at the end of that week, and when I was in Kuwait, now I wouldn't have worn a split skirt. Now this is not risque here. I mean, it's my split stops only a couple inches above my knees. But there, you know, I would never have worn anything like this. And as a matter of fact, if I know I'm going to meet with Middle Eastern people, I wouldn't wear this either. So, but anyway, after a year there, at the end of the time, the wife said to me, she said, you know, after having known you and having met you, we think that not all American women are loose and not all American women are bad. That there are ones who have morals and standards. And I thought, so I just made a statement for all American females while I was there, you know, unintentionally. But it was, their impression of women has come from Dallas, you know,
the TV series.
Oh, not the city, the TV series. You know, I mean,
James Bond is very popular,
you know,
in the Middle East.
Bikini-clad women laying all over men and switching husbands on a regular basis and playing around with ones that aren't their husband, you know. So if that's their impression of American women, my goodness. No wonder when I would go out on the street unaccompanied by David, I was harassed verbally frequently by young Arab boys because they just thought that because I'm blonde, they call this blonde there, but because I'm lighter haired and obviously Western, that was sort of my level of behavior. And it's sad.
Well, as far as the unique question, I must ask this. Hmm. They, in their own culture, do the women swim? Do they wear swimsuits, even at a private pool, or do they do any kinds of things like
well,
that?
Well, we can't generalize because we're talking about 100 million women. So
right.
Within that great pool of humanity, there are a lot of people that are very, very cosmopolitan. And they do go down to the beaches in places like Alexandria in Egypt and Lebanon before the war.
And there was a family beach in Kuwait.
Family beach. But a lot of them would go into the water with their clothing on. The women would go in and wade and might even go up to their waist wearing their clothes.
It was really hot there.
Yeah.
I had a former colleague. How strict Muslims say
are. Right. I mean, it could depend on their family tradition, their... You know, a lot of factors, but there's a lot of variation.
I lived in Saudi Arabia and works in the same field as I do, and he told me, and I'm not, again speaking for the overpopulation, but said that on several flights in and out of the country, as they left, the women got rid of their veils and put makeup on and went to places they would not normally go to in their own country, and on the way back before they landed, they were getting back into their gear. Mm-hmm. And he said he witnessed that several times.
Mm-hmm. So. Some keep it on, you know, and those are the ones that feel uncomfortable taking it off. Others only wear it for convenience. So you find real diversity of how they feel about that, yeah.
But I think that's something, awareness of the culture of the country that we're visiting, I don't care where it is very important because I think that's why Americans have... earn the reputation they have. My daughter, with a college class, was visiting Greece and ended up going to a lot of the small towns, and they had on slacks, and their legs were switched. You know, the old man with the little switches. And I think it's very important to understand if what we are doing is offending a deeply held belief in the culture that we're visiting, because we're the visitor, you know, and I think it's very important.
Mm. It's a little bit analogous to the image of the young Arab man in our culture, say Yakima, who in the 70s was driving around in his Trans Am and kind of provoking the local kids because he was wealthy. He could kind of woo the young ladies And the young men in our culture, I heard of cases in Yakima where they would go and beat up these guys. And in recently in Colorado, this happened to a group of Japanese students. So this can raise a real backlash even in our culture when they see someone who stands out and doesn't accommodate to the local culture. So it can go in either case. That's a good example. I didn't realize they did that in Greece. That's really something. We have another... And you may have heard of the case a few years ago in Israel where there was a stoning of a tour bus because the women were dressed too kind of provocatively.
Wow.
Yeah.
The soccer's were wearing their shorts in Israel.
Yeah, but in certain parts of town, maybe it was the Sabbath.
Oh.
There was a people stoned the bus. We have another case study of a family who, someone who was here at Holden mentioned this. A family was invited to another family's home and they had dinner together. Was anybody here telling me this?
No.
Okay. And so they had dinner together. I think the American family had had dinner at their home first and then they reciprocated and had this family over. Now this family was actually from India, I believe, but a Muslim family. And so they sat together and passed food around.
And they alternated male, female.
And they had them all mixed together.
When we sit people at a table.
And they just seemed really uncomfortable and they kind of left hastily and didn't, you know, seem real. After that, things were kind of strained. And so this lady who was here at Holden was asking me, why would that happen? Any thoughts? What might have caused them to be uncomfortable?
Maybe the men should have been served first.
That's probably it. After we talked for a while, I said, well, do you think maybe they were uncomfortable with the male-female mix together? She said, gee, that's right. You know, when we were at their house, the women did the serving, but didn't eat with us. Mm-hmm. But in our house, we all sat together and just... And the other thing was the way of, she thought maybe it had to do with the way they served the food, because here it was very informal in her home. They passed the food around, whereas in the other home, the women came and served each person around the table. So perhaps their point of view was, gee, this is rather crude. I guess I'm not a very important guest. Because they're just sort of serving the stuff. It's another example of this would be the international student comes over to the American home for the first time, walks in and the dad is home and he says, yeah, go on, grab yourself a beer, you know. Yeah, or something else. Yeah, go in there, go into the kitchen and get something, whatever you want, make yourself at home. And it's like, oh, so I'm a servant? We think, oh, well, we're just welcome and making them part of the home. Any other stories, incidents that you all have from international?
I have a specific problem or something that I would like to get an idea on. My cousins are Sununus. My aunt is I'm a nephew of my aunt, and John Sununu is a nephew. I've met his parents.
This is the diplomat.
Diplomat.
Wow.
He's Lebanese.
Uh-huh.
And I was recently visited one of my cousins in California, and I try to find out certain things, but when he's invited, so far, when he's invited to dinner, they have a dedicated library out in California. Well, my cousin lives about a mile from there, and she invited him for dinner, but he was too busy with the dedication, he couldn't come. So I'm just wondering, is Bush, I know he's a brilliant man, has Bush got him in that position because he, also because he knows something about the Middle East?
Boy.
That goes through my mind.
Well, you know, he's been accused of being anti-Jewish.
Well, I would
John Sununu has.
He's
come under attack for that.
My aunt lived in Lebanon until 3 or 4 years ago. She got him, I think it'll be 4 years Christmas. And she stayed there
bitter end, yeah. You know, her house has been,
yeah,
never bombed, but the glass broke every other day. And when she went back to get what belongings she could, she went illegally. And I know she hates the Jewish people. And I would guess that the Sudanese, his parents were born there.
Mm-hmm. Was that Lebanese?
Yeah, Lebanese.
Yeah. Lebanese. And
I would think that Bush would primarily be concerned about other factors. You know, Sununu is a very conservative person in many other areas. I don't know that that's a signal that Bush himself is, say, anti-Israeli or something.
I gotta believe that he's using to some extent.
There was some concern that Sununu was using his position to kind of develop an anti-Israeli feeling in the administration. But I don't know if that's true. He's denied it, of course.
Well, I'm sure they'd say that because they don't like him and they want to get rid
of him. That's right. That's right. Now, all you got to do is say the guy's anti-Semitic and he's finished.
Well, actually, no, politically. His wife is Catholic and his children were raised Catholic.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's an interesting
Because my uncle was—he went back to Lebanon because they were going to stay. He and my aunt were going to stay until his parents died. Well, he got into a little import-export business with his brothers, who were the agents of the United States, and he traveled around the Middle East gathering up items that they thought they could sell and. He could speak six or eight languages, he could read six or eight newspapers, and he could listen to six or eight different language radio programs. And one day he might be a Muslim, and the next day he might be a Christian. He was a very talented man. My wife and I feel that he had a real... his personality was... blah, real blah.
Interestingly, Lebanese people do have a reputation now, you know, how one ethnic group will stereotype another ethnic group. And the Iranians love to tell jokes about the Turks, and it goes on and on. Each group tells jokes about the other. Lebanese are characterized as being very, very shrewd business people. So this would sort of fall into that category of the person who can handle, who can work with in a very complex situation as a good bargainer.
Now you can see why they had some conflicts in conflicts in Lebanon, because they really used to help people as servants, and they.
Oh, thank you.
And that's why my aunt stayed there. She could get all her work done for almost nothing. $25 a month for a maid.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to our next section here. Anne would like to share a couple of just real positive experiences that we've had over the years. We have met hundreds of Middle Eastern people, and almost we were sitting trying to think of some bad experiences, and we really can hardly think of any. I mean, we just had overwhelmingly positive relationships with Middle Eastern people. So, Anne's going to share a couple. Well,
yeah, we've shared a little bit about the Al-Harbis, our Kuwaiti family. We actually met their son here in the States when he was an international student studying English and going to university. And when we made the decision to go overseas, we actually had a job offer in Saudi Arabia and one in Kuwait. And we chose the one in Kuwait because of his family. So we would go visit them. And I think, as I've shared before, a visit usually consisted of at least 4 or 5 hours of time together each week. And on the occasions when we stopped by, for instance, on Mother's Day, we stopped by to drop off a plant to Mazen, Mrs. Al-Harbi. And we intended just to sort of drop it off, say Happy Mother's Day, and leave in a typical sort of a 15-minute stop by, which ended up into be an hour and a half, I think we were actually there. But we were informed that wasn't an official visit for the week. So They were very delightful, very charming. The one thing that I thought was interesting is when I thought about going to live overseas, I thought, okay, I want to make sure that I, you know, understand the culture and ask appropriate questions and discuss things that are important to them. The one thing about Kuwaiti culture that was a little tricky is that because they're so rich, they would frequently go to the gold market and buy different things at the gold market and talk about their jewelry that they bought at the gold market. So we couldn't exactly discuss that topic because I didn't go to the gold market and buy gold. But they were very nice, and so we would ask them questions on how they met.